Well, good morning. Hey, like I said earlier, we are so incredibly excited that you are here as we dig into part two of this four-part series that we are calling Chasing Carrots. And throughout this series, we are acknowledging this tension that lives in every single one of us, this tension to endlessly pursue more. For every single one of us, whatever that more is may be a little bit different, but for every single one of us, this truth remains. That there has been a moment in our life in which we have been convinced that if we accumulate more in that particular area, that we will finally experience the contentment and fulfillment and purpose and happiness that we were destined to find. For some of us, it's more notoriety in our lives. For some of us, it's more acknowledgement at our job. For some of us, it's more popularity with our friends. For some of us, it's more money in the bank account or more stuff in the garage or more on the bottom line. But every single one of us have a more that we have been lured into believing will create a life we always desired to live. And so we jump on the hamster wheel and we find ourselves endlessly pursuing the promise that more will finally get us to where we want to be. And if we look close enough and we get honest enough, what every single one of us would be forced to admit is this, is that at some point in our lives, we have all been tricked into buying into this myth when it comes to our money and our stuff. And the collective groan rises. Because you're like, here I am walking into a church for the first time or the first time in a long time. Why did I have to choose to come on this week? Here we go again, just like the church always does. They're going to talk to me about money. And what I want you to know is this, and I want to put your mind at ease. You see, we are a church that talks about money differently, and this is the reason why. Because we believe with all of our hearts that we have a God that desires something for you, not something from you. And we want to be a church that operates in the exact same fashion. That we believe with all of our hearts that when we talk about money, we talk about it in a different way. Because it isn't about guilting you into putting more money in the box or doing something radically different with your money that benefits us as an organization. This isn't about that at all. This is about presenting something that finally allows us to get off of this pursuit that is leading us down a road that we never wanted to go on. That is convincing us that if we just get more in the area of money and stuff, we will be happy. And yet we never find happiness, no matter how much more we get. And so this morning is simply this. It's simply inviting you on a journey. On a journey that we believe with all of our hearts. That if we begin to take steps in this direction, leads us towards a life that is so much better than what we are presently living. Leads us towards a life that God designed us to live. And so I want to challenge you to think about this. This morning, I want to present four different questions to you all. And I'm not going to embarrass you by asking you to physically raise your hand, but I want you to get honest and to mentally raise your hand if you relate to any of these questions. The first is this. How many of you all would kind of like to be just a little bit more rich? Amen, right? Now, how many of y'all would say you know somebody who is rich? Now, how many of you would say that in that person you know that is rich, you believe you could do a better job at being rich than the person who is rich does at being rich? And lastly, how many of y'all would consider yourselves to be rich? Now, my guess is this. Is that if we would have asked you to physically raise your hand this morning, there would have been a whole lot of hands that went up for the first question, right? Yeah, I'd kind of like to be just a little bit more rich. And there would be very few hands that went up for the last question. I'm not rich yet. You see, what that signifies in every single one of our lives, our mindsets, and even our hearts is this truth that we hate to admit. That when it comes to our money and our stuff, we have not arrived at where we want to be yet. We are on this pursuit for more, and we live in a culture, we live in a world in which there are constantly reminders in which to elevate your value, your worth, your purpose in this world, you need to have more in this area of your life. It's a reminder every time your next door neighbor drives a new car into his driveway, right? It's a reminder every time your best friends buy a house that's bigger and nicer than your house. It's a reminder when those people have the camper or the boat that you wished you had. It's a reminder in your life when the guy who used to work on the same line as you is now working in the office making six figures. In our lives, we encounter reminder after reminder that make us jump on the hamster wheel and believe that if I could just have a little bit more, if my life could be a little bit more like theirs in the area of money and stuff, then maybe my family would be better. Maybe I would be happier. Maybe I would find fulfillment and contentment in my life. If I just had a wardrobe that was as expensive and trendy as the woman in the office next to me, then I would finally be happy. And yet what happens when at every turn, happiness eludes us? You see, I came across this study and this article that was written that collected data on what people would do if they had the opportunity to acquire $5 million. And the results that they found were absolutely astounding, and some of them just downright scary. You see, in the study, it showed that 52% of people were willing to listen to country music and only country music for the rest of their lives if they had an opportunity to acquire $5 million. They were willing to sacrifice their eardrums for $5 million. Some of you are country music fans. You're like, I'm never going back to that church again. The study also showed that 42% of people would be willing to have every tooth in their mouth extracted at an opportunity to have $5 million. And I guess they thought I could get a pretty sweet set of dentures for $5 million. But then it turned scary. The study also showed that 50% of people were willing to allow one random person in the world to die if they could acquire $5 million. The study also showed that 24% of people were willing to live the next 20 years of their life in absolute solitude, not having contact, relationship, conversation with another human being on this earth. Isn't that crazy? And while many of us sit there and we're like, I don't fall into any of those percentages, what this study begins to reveal in every single one of us, if we got honest enough about our past, is this. Is that at some point in our lives, we have sacrificed something that is important to us for the sake of acquiring more when it comes to our money and our stuff. Gallup also did a study where they asked people what they believed rich was. And what they found was absolutely astounding, because they decided in this study, in this poll, to ask people who were in different monetary breakdowns. And so they started with people who made $30,000 a year, and they asked those people, what do you think rich is? And those people said that they believed they would be rich if they could simply make $74,000 a year. Then they moved the scale and they started to ask people who made $50,000 a year what their definition of being rich was. And they signified that they believed they would be rich if they could make $100,000 a year. And they proceeded through this until they reached the upper echelon of earners, people who made $250,000 or more per year. And they asked them what they believed richness was. And they believed that rich would be if they were able to accumulate over $5 million in assets. And what this study begins to expose in our endless pursuit of more money and more stuff is that the finish line is always moving. When we find ourselves on the hamster wheel, constantly chasing more in this area of our lives, the finish line never stays the same. Because as soon as we start to reach $74,000, guess what? $74,000 isn't rich anymore. And all of a sudden we believe I got to make $125,000 to be rich. And all of a sudden we make $125,000 and it's $175,000 to be rich. We always have this sliding scale that keeps us in this endless pursuit and keeps us void of contentment and fulfillment. The contentment and fulfillment that God desired you and I to have in our lives. And that dangerous path that we find ourselves on is the very reason why. When this guy named Jesus walked on this earth, he talked about this thing, money, so often. Because he knew it was one of those things in our lives. If we had an incorrect perception of what money could do for us, it would derail us from being the people we were created to be. It would derail us from the marriages we wanted to have, from being the parents we were designed to be, from having fulfillment and contentment like he desires us to have. God is saying, man, I sent my son to talk about money. Why? Not because I needed your money, not because I wanted something from you, because I loved you enough to talk about something that could do something incredible for you. And it's the reason why we pick up warnings like this in the book of Luke. It's where we're going to dive into this morning. And if you haven't done so already, this is an incredible opportunity for you to grab your weekly. It's what you got when you came in this morning. And if you crack that open, you'll find a notes page that we've designed specifically for you in there. On that notes page, you can follow along with us as we move through the text. You can even grab a pen way up in the seat back in front of you and fill in some blanks, some things that you can hang on to and process through in the hours and days and weeks to come as you struggle with this hamster wheel of chasing more money and stuff in your life in the hopes that it will finally make you happy. But we pick up Jesus in this passage, and he gives this incredible warning to you and to I that is still so incredibly relevant 2,000 years later. In chapter 12, verse 15, he says this, "Then he," meaning Jesus, "said, 'Beware, guard against every kind of greed, for life is not measured by how much you own.'" And that last sentence is absolutely powerful because here's what it spoke into my life and into my heart, and you can see if you relate to this or not. So often in my life, I equate my value, my worth, my contentment, my happiness by the things in which I do not have yet. That I will be happier if I just get there. If I just earn this much, if I just have this much in the bank account, if I just raise this church to this level of attenders every single Sunday, or our budget finally gets to this place, then I will be happy. I measure the value and worth of my life by what I do not yet have. And Jesus stops us in our tracks and he says, whoa, 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 hang on. So many of us as humanity are prone to that belief. And if you want to get off the hamster wheel and start chasing something that's worth it, what you must understand is that life is not lived in the abundance of stuff. Your life will not be measured by what you do or do not own. The legacy you live on this earth will not be measured by the stuff in which you acquire. But to steer clear of that way of thinking and that constant pursuit, I love the verb that Jesus uses here. He says, if you want to steer clear from this hamster wheel, you must guard yourself. You must actively do something. You must be on the defensive or go on the offensive every day of your life, because those reminders we talked about earlier, the guy drives the new Corvette into his driveway. They buy the 2,500 square foot house and yours is only 1,900 square foot. They have the wardrobe that you wish you were wearing. Those reminders will be there every single day in some way, shape, or form for the rest of our lives. And so we must guard ourselves against that perspective, and we must fight back against that, because those things, if we allow them, if we get complacent, this is why he says guard yourself. If we get complacent, we've all experienced this, those things will slowly seep into our lives and our minds, and like a cancer, they will take over. And they will convince us that just like everybody else, you need to chase this to get ahead, to be more prominent, to be looked at better. And unfortunately, time and time again, we fail to admit that that just isn't working. That to this point, we haven't found what we're looking for yet. And unfortunately, newsflash, we will never find what we are looking for if we keep pursuing it in that way. And just a few verses later, Jesus drives his point home with this parable of a rich man. And to kind of set the table for you all, here's what's taking place. Jesus tells this incredible story, this parable, in only a way that he can. And he tells this story about this farmer who has farmed for the entirety of his life, and he always makes this certain amount of crop every year. And then one year, he hits it rich. His crop absolutely explodes, and he has more excess than what he has ever known and what he knows what to do with. And so this rich man, now stumbled into riches, is deciding, what do I do with all of this wealth that I have now acquired? And you can just imagine his mind turning, like, do I give it away to people in need? Do I reinvest it so that I can make more later? Or maybe his bright idea was this. Maybe what I should do is this. I'll tear down all the barns that I presently have that store all the crop I could need. I'll tear all those down. And now I've got more than enough for the little barns that I've got that would suffice me. I'm going to tear those down and I'm going to build bigger barns to hold all of my stuff, and I'm going to hang on to it all, and I'm going to admire it, and I'm going to retire and just party for the rest of my life, and I'm going to sit back and just look at my money, at my stuff, and how wealthy I am, and enjoy the sight of it. And as Jesus is telling this story, and he encounters this mindset that all of us have had in our lives that we hate to admit, he responds in this way. In verse 20, he says, but God said to him, you fool, you will die this very night. Then who will get everything you have worked for? Yes, a person is a fool to store up earthly wealth, but not have a rich relationship with God. And you see, what this passage points out is so incredible. It's something that every single one of us must hang on to as we talk about getting off this hamster wheel. You see, God did not come to him and tell him he was making a wrong turn in his life because he was rich or wealthy. You don't see that in this text. No, God says the problem entered into your life when you made your wealth the number one priority of your life. When you made the pursuit of more in that area the number one priority in your life, you've elevated money and stuff to a pedestal in which it doesn't deserve to sit on. And that pedestal that you have elevated it to has now bumped me out of the first place of your life. It has now bumped your wife down a step. It has now bumped your kids down. You have put money and stuff and the pursuit of it on a pedestal that is driving your life to places that always leave you falling short. It wasn't the richness that was the problem. It was the pursuit. The pursuit that crowded everything else out that started to introduce the problems. And I know what some of us think because I've been there. I've thought this. Maybe y'all haven't thought this. But you're like, Ben, how can you say it's nudging my family out because I'm pursuing more in this area? I'm doing it because I love my family. Because I want to give them a better life. Better than what? Better than your next door neighbors? I mean, deep down, do we really believe that going from $75,000 to $100,000 a year is really providing our family the better life that they need and desire from us? I don't know about you, but I'm not okay from that sentiment because that strikes a chord in my heart. Better what? See, we've been called to something different. We've been called to understand that our marriages will not be measured by how much we own. That our success as parents will not be measured by how much we own. That our lives and our legacies when we leave this world will not be measured by how much we own. But to get over the hump, to jump over this hurdle of money constantly being this carrot that is dangling in front of us that we are pursuing, and never quite reaching, we must acknowledge that when it comes to our money and our stuff, there is good news and there is bad news. And so my question to you is this. Which do you want first? The good news is in my notes first, so we're going with that. You see, the good news about our money and our stuff is this. I am rich. I am rich. You are rich. And I know you may not feel like you are rich, but check this out. The numbers do not lie. You and I are both rich where we sit. Do you realize that right here, right now in our world, 2020, there are over 3 billion, yes, with a B, 3 billion people in our world who presently live on under $2 per day. 3 billion people who live on less than $2 per day. Do you realize that if you presently drive a car, that puts you in the top 15% of wealth in our world? If in your household you make $25,000, you find yourself in the top 10% of wealth in this world. And if in your household you make $50,000, you are now in the 1% of wealthiest people in the world. We like to talk about one percenters, one percenters, one percenters. We are one percenters. We are rich. And I don't know about you, but I speak for myself in this. If I'm rich, I want to be darn good at being rich, right? Like, I don't want to be that person that you were thinking about in your mind when I asked the question, do you know someone who's rich that you think you could be better at being rich than they are at being rich? Like, I don't want to be that person. And what we all know about that rich person that we were thinking about in our mind, stingy, unaware rich people are not good rich people. Because unaware rich people, people who aren't willing to admit first that they are rich, you know what they get locked into? A scarcity mindset. I'm not quite there yet, and so I need to hang on to everything I've got, and I need to white knuckle my money and my resources because I'm not there, but when I get there and I finally reach what I once deemed to be rich, when I finally get there, then I can let go. Then I can be generous. Then I can help other people. And all of a sudden, we reach $75,000 and the finish line has moved. Not yet. I'm not rich yet. And we reach $150,000. Not yet. And we reach 200, not yet, not till I get to $5 million worth of assets. And the scarcity mindset keeps us from impacting this world and the people around us in the way in which we were created to. In order to be good at being rich, we must first just admit, I'm stinking rich, I'm filthy. But not only do we have to admit that we are rich, what we also must acknowledge is this, and this is good. What we also must acknowledge is that being rich is not a bad thing. Y'all, come on. Being rich is not a bad thing. It is a good thing. And what I know about myself, and maybe you can relate to this, is there is like no other attribute that comes with as much guilt as wealth, right? Like people can compliment you on just about anything. They can be like, oh my gosh, you look good. You must be working out. You must be eating right. You've lost so much weight. And while we might be a little bit embarrassed because we don't know how to take a compliment, we're not guilty about that. But then people come up to you and they're like, man, you've been so blessed. You've got so much money. You're wealthy. And all of a sudden, all of our defenses go up and we start to vehemently deny that, right? Like, oh, I'm not rich. I'm not rich like that guy's rich. I don't have all that much money. Why does the guilt factor rise up in us? There is not one thing in this book, not one thing in God's word to you and I that says money is a bad thing. That says just because you are wealthy or rich, you are a bad person. That's not what God desired for us to hear and for us to understand. In fact, what we see time and time again is the exact opposite. One of the wisest men to ever walk on this earth, King Solomon, he wrote this, check this out, in Ecclesiastes chapter 5. And it is a good thing. Some of y'all who are taking notes, who have a pen, you need to underline that word good. It is a good thing to receive wealth from God and the good health to enjoy it, to enjoy your work and accept your lot in life. This is indeed a gift from God. Being rich is not bad. It's good. Having money and being able to enjoy what you have been blessed with is a gift from God. But we will only get over this hump of this endless pursuit of more if we first acknowledge that we are rich and that in that wealth, it is not in and of itself a bad thing. But then we must acknowledge the bad news. And the bad news of our money and stuff is I am rich. I am rich. And while money and stuff is not bad in and of itself, what we know from our lives and our past is this, is that with wealth and richness, no matter what degree of wealth or richness you find yourself in this morning, with that wealth and richness, there are three distinct disadvantages that come with that. The first is this. In our wealth and our richness, we slowly progress to less dependence on God. Y'all have heard the Lord's Prayer, right? In there it says, "Give us this day our daily bread." How many of us in our lives, no matter how bad it's been, have had to pray that prayer seriously? It's like, God, I don't really need you to give my daily bread today because I got a whole pantry full right over there. In our lives, as we've acquired more and more and we experience richness and wealth, we don't really need God to step in on our behalf at any point within our lives. And so we slowly lose this dependence and we slowly begin to believe, I'm doing it myself. I can do it myself. I can handle it. I don't need anybody else, let alone God, to step in on my behalf with something that's uncomfortable to me and my money. But not only do we have less dependence on God, our wealth, our richness also creates more distractions in our lives, right? Like in your house alone, you have an endless amount of distractions. Flip on Netflix anytime you want, Amazon Prime and catch some Cobra Kai. You have an endless amount of toys in your garage or your kids like drive you nuts. I'm going to talk like the 3 and 4 year old dad that I am. Like, why did we have to get a million things out? We just cleaned the house and now they're all over this floor and all over this floor and you've carried them up to your bedroom. And it's like, let's just go down to 2 toys so that I don't have to put all of these things away all the time. There's an endless amount of toys and distractions in our life from the time we are little. And then we venture outside of our house, and because of our wealth, our richness, no matter what degree it is, it's like we can put our kids in as many distractions as they want to be in. We can fill up our schedules, being the chauffeur for our kids to every darn thing they want to be a part of. And it's just distraction after distraction that gets us from pillow to pillow every single day. And then third, not only do we have in our lives less dependence and more distractions, but with it comes more responsibility. To whom much is given, much is required. That our resources have actually been entrusted to us, that we have been blessed with wealth and richness to do something in our world with it, to impact others' lives. To whom much is given, much is required. We have been made rich. Many of us in this room find ourselves, if nothing else, at least in the top 15% of wealth in this world. What that means is much is required of us for the other 85% of the world. It shouldn't take the government stepping in and saying what you should give away for us to be generous to those in need around us. That's what the local church was designed for. That's what you and I were designed for. As Christ followers, we have a responsibility with what we have been given, with our richness. But here's the problem. The problem is that when we start to believe that money or stuff is the answer for happiness in our lives, we start to slowly slip under the control of money. Money begins to control us. When we pursue it at all costs, we become a slave to money. Instead of the designed purpose, we were meant to make money our slave. We were meant to be the masters of our money. But slowly, in this endless pursuit of more, things have gotten flipped around. And in our lives, we have constantly pursued what is temporary, thinking that it will bring us happiness. And what we're forced to admit is this: what we don't need is more of what's temporary. What we do need is more of what's eternal. That is what progresses us towards fulfillment, contentment, purpose in this life. And I know what you're thinking. You walked in here this morning and you were blindsided by a talk on money and you're thinking, Ben, spare me because I know this. I have heard this before. Ben, spare me because I am far too mature to be having another talk about money in church. Newsflash. We all know this. I know this. But guess what happens in Ben Carver's life and mind and heart? I get caught up in the distractions of my life and in this world, and it is so easy to forget this. It is so easy to get knocked off course. And I need to be reminded every once in a while. No matter how much I know it, sometimes there's like this lapse between here and here. This lapse between here and here. And I need to be reminded to renew my perspective and to get back to where God has designed me to be so that I can get off of the dumb hamster wheel and start living the life that God intended me to live. None of us want to be controlled. We want to take back control. But how do we do that? We live out this incredible instruction that a guy named Paul gave to this young guy named Timothy. Timothy was just growing into age, and he had just gotten his first big boy job. And Paul decides to write this letter to Timothy, giving him instruction. And now that you're an adult, here's how you should live life, and here's the model that you should set for the people around you, and here's what you should pass on in your legacy. And we get to a part in this letter where Paul says, now that you're a big boy, and now that you got a big boy job, you need to begin to model this in your money, your stuff, your finances. Here's what I'm asking you to pass on to those around you. And this is so good. Check this out. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, Paul writes this. Teach those who are rich in this world not to be proud and not to trust in their money, which is so unreliable. Their trust should be in God, who richly gives us all we need for our enjoyment. Tell them to use their money to do good. They should be rich in good works and generous to those in need, always being ready to share with others. Why? Because then you can finally let go of your guilt when you walk into church and they guilt you into putting more money in the box in the back. Nope, that's not how it ends. Why? Because God desperately needs your money to survive. That's why. No. Paul says, here's why I'm passing this on to you, because this is the kind of life I want you to experience. By doing this, they will be storing up their treasure as a good foundation for the future so that they may experience true life. So that they may experience life and experience it to the full. That's what God desired us to know when it comes to our money and our stuff. Not I need something from you, not I need your money, not I need you to put more in the box in the back. No, I want you to experience true life. That's how much God loves us. As I read through this passage, there were these three things that I picked out that I thought, man, if we could just remind ourselves of these three things every single day when we wake up, it would allow us to regain control of our money and our stuff instead of it controlling us. And so here's what I found in this passage, and this is so good, hopefully, for all of y'all. The first thing I found is this, is that every day we must acknowledge this truth, that I have been given and God has blessed me with more than I need. I am rich. I've been given more than I need. And I am rich. But today, I will not trust in my riches, but in Him who richly provides. And third, because I have been given more, and I have more, I will give more and do more. Because I have more and I am rich, I will give more and I will do this world with our lives. There is this responsibility that comes along with it. And we want to be great at being rich. The temporary things of this world will keep making promises that they cannot deliver on. When you buy that thing, there's this buzz. And that buzz keeps us coming back for more. But guess what? We've all experienced that buzz fades. And slowly it goes into the garage and it never comes out of the corner. It goes into the storage unit. It goes into the basement or into a closet until it comes out one day in a garage sale. And we believe, well, that thing didn't have the buzz that lasts. And so we just keep chasing the next buzz of the next stuff and the next money. But what if we decided to stop letting the buzz control us and we started to do something that matters with our richness? Let's do something that lasts. Let's make a difference like only rich people can make a difference. A few years ago, there was something that happened that absolutely rocked my world. As some of you know, every summer we take a trip to our care point in Guatemala City. And our care point is located right in the heart, right in the center of Guatemala City, in one of the most impoverished neighborhoods in the entirety of the country. It's in a place called La Terminal Market. In a third world country, to say it's one of the most impoverished parts of the country, it's saying an awful lot. And every day we would go to our care point and we would meet our kids and the family of our kids. And a couple years ago, we got an opportunity to do something different. And I absolutely loved it. I don't know if anybody else on our trip loves it, but I absolutely loved it. And I'm the leader. And so every year I get to say, we got to do that again. We got to do that again. We got to do that again. And what we picked out was one night, there was a small team of people from our team who would create sandwiches and make coffee. And then at night, after all the kids had gone home to their families, we would load up hundreds of sandwiches and these giant pots full of coffee and shopping carts. And we would follow Jamada, our care point leader, around this part of the city. And she would stop all along the way, meeting families of kids in our care point who were hungry and who were broke. And she would stop finding other impoverished families that weren't even a part of the care point, but she knew were in need. And we would give them sandwiches and we would give them coffee to fill their bellies and to warm themselves before the night. And at one point we had stopped and she was looking for other families within their shanties. The best way that I can describe it, and I know it's nothing like this, but to paint a picture for y'all, y'all have seen Rocky, right? Where Rocky starts to run through Philadelphia, and as he keeps running, right, there's like a few people that latch on, and they start to run with him until he reaches the stairs in Philadelphia, and there's like a whole bunch of people. Whereas we were going out in much smaller numbers than Rocky, obviously, as we started to pass things out throughout the community, our kids from our care point would see us, and they would come out, and they got their sandwich, and they got their drink, and they had scarfed it down, and they just wanted to help. They just wanted to pass out with us. And so they would slowly start to join us. And at one point we were waiting there and there were all of these kids. So we were hanging out with them and talking with them. And this little boy who had been following us around the entire time, helping us. And he had disappeared for a few minutes. And so we just assumed, you know, it's in a dangerous part of town. It's getting dark outside. He's probably gone home. His parents don't want him to be out. And a few minutes later, this little boy came up to me with this little napkin folded in his hands. And he extended his arms to me. And he unfolded this napkin with the biggest smile on his face. And inside that napkin was this little piece of lemon bread. And through our translator, we asked, like, where did he get this? Where did he come up with this lemon bread? He had gone to a bakery within La Terminal Market and used every bit of change that he had in his pocket to buy this piece of bread, not to feed his own hungry stomach, to be able to give it to me. As we thanked him profusely and we divided this bread up amongst a few of us, hoping that if we ate it in small amounts, it wouldn't make us quite as sick because we didn't know where it came from. To see this little boy's face shine. And to get a glimpse of his perspective on money and stuff. It rocked my world. What would my life look like if I woke up every day with the same mentality that he did? That my money and my stuff weren't meant to add to my ever-growing list of temporary things in this world. But what lights me up is being able to invest in other people's lives with the things that I have been blessed with. It was this acknowledgement. And am I a person who views my money and my resources in the same way that this little boy does? That if it came down to my last two nickels to rub together, would I hang on to the same scarcity mindset that I've been living in my richness? Or would I be willing to see that what I have been given is to be used to impact the people around me and to invest in their lives as well? You see, God says, I'm asking this of you. To know that you have been given more and you are rich, but you don't trust in your riches, but in him who richly provides. And because you have more, you commit to giving more and doing more. When you live like that, it isn't about me getting something from you. What I want you to understand is when you begin to live like that is the very moment when you get off the hamster wheel and you begin to experience true life. That's what I want for you. That's what I've designed you for. This endless pursuit of more will leave you disappointed every time. But if you take steps towards my instruction, you will experience life and experience it to the full. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, we thank you for what a great God you are. We thank you for being a God who loves us enough to make it known time and time again. I don't want something from you. I want something for you. And you sent your son to talk about things that were uncomfortable to talk about in our lives, things like money and stuff, so that we could experience a life of fulfillment and contentment and purpose and happiness. Not by chasing what everybody else is chasing. Not through this endless pursuit of more, filled with promises that more will never live up to. But in seeing our money and our stuff in a different way. God, give us the courage to do just that. It's in your name that I pray. Amen.